Anything combat with Johnny K.
It's anything combat, though.
Welcome back, combatants, to the Anything Combat show, where we discuss everything mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Johnny K., and today we're joined by a guy who helps people find true strength. He provides coaching. He's a 5-time trainer of the year. Shout out Jake Brutal Bostwick for setting this appointment up. Please welcome to the show, Phil DeRue. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on, Johnny. I appreciate it.
All good, bro. So that 5-time trainer of the year, what does that even mean to you? Do you even care about stuff like that?
Not really. I look at myself as a person that wants to help evolve, improve others' lives in a way that I know how I can do. And a lot of times it comes with that. So with me being able to win some awards and get those accolades, it's like a perk, but the goal always from a performance standpoint, from a physical preparation coach standpoint, is to get my guys ready and prepare to win. And that's really what I look at mostly. I got a guy that I'm actually going into camp with in about a month, and he's working towards winning back his WBO title, Robeson Ramirez, and he's a really solid boxer, one of the best boxers I've been able to train. And, you know, they asked me, this is something for me that is going to take a lot of time, because this is the first time I'm actually leaving for a camp for 2 months straight with an individual just for him. For the most part, they usually come to my gym and we handle camp there, but we're actually leaving. And the manager asked me, was like, you know, it's going to be great for him. And I was like, man, it's going to be great for me, honestly. And the reason why is because it allows me to truly go in as much as I possibly can and fully focus on an individual that is trying to win back the WBO title, which he's had in the past. And I think for me, that's going to give me a sense of accomplishment, and it's going to fill a void of my purpose in life. And that is to help and to provide service to those individuals needing my help in a sense.
When did you find that purpose? Like, how did you find it?
Okay, so I've always been intrigued with performance. I've always been someone who wanted to get better. I played football American football, and I played sports all my life, pretty much. Martial arts since I was 4 years old, and I've always loved training. I've always loved getting in the weight room, getting on the field, getting faster, getting stronger, increasing my power production and my endurance. And then when I was able to do that with other individuals, it was just rewarding to me. You know, not because I could only do it for myself, but I was able to do it for others. And so I think that that's one way that I was like, okay, this is something that I could do for the rest of my life. And in any way, I think that we all seek to help others. And that's one of the true reasons why we are all here living amongst each other, you know. And that's the point where people have to realize that it's deeper than you. And if you have that ability to help others, you need to do so. And you need to do it in the best way possible that you can do it. And this is like, Johnny, this is what you're doing, man. You're allowing people to come on your show and talk a little bit, maybe a little bit of knowledge and experience about their lives. And it's improving other people's lives who actually listen to them. So you're inspiring people to get out there and change and do things that maybe they thought they couldn't do. And that's the reason why you do podcasting. That's the reason why you talk to individuals that are like-minded, because you want to get that sense of inspiration. And from there, you have a purpose. And that's why I think that what I do is important, you know, for me at least.
Most definitely. I saw you working with Kevin Lee and Dustin. So a lot of the US guys, they prioritize their strength and conditioning, and they get real serious results out of their training. And some of the Russian guys, their strength and conditioning programs sometimes aren't the best. Yeah, they focus on plyometrics a lot, but sometimes they don't have the same knowledge that I think that the US guys are doing right now. So do you feel like if you were to help out the, like, even the Caucasus guys in wrestling and MMA, if you think you would be able to slap on the Daru systems onto those guys, do you think that they would, like, go ballistic?
I believe that they have an understanding what works for them. There's some things that I could bring to the table that may be a little bit more systematic and strategized to help them in any way possible. But at the end of the day, they're still very dominant in what they do already. But I do see that, obviously, if I come into the situation, I'm going to try to do my best and find gaps and limitations in their training, and so that I can plug those gaps to help them be even better. So that's just me being a competitor and being a coach. I'm looking at what needs to be fixed. Now, do I think that if I could come in there and help them out, they'll be better fighters? I don't know. Probably not, you know, because they're already great fighters. Will they be better athletes, better movers, recover better? Possibly, if I can figure out what's going on, have a detailed approach to it, and then dissect the issues that are ahead, maybe reduce the risk of injury, maybe, you know, increase, you know, their ability to recover in between rounds, whatever it is. That's what I would do if I had that opportunity. Now, I did do about 15 days consulting in Chechnya back when I was about 26. This was 2017, 2016, something like that. And, you know, these guys are very strong, very strong-willed, obviously tough-minded, diligent, and consistent, you know, even down to their religious beliefs and how they go about handling themselves. They're diligent, they're consistent, they have a very stoic mindset, and that helps them evolve and be the best fighters they can be. The one thing that I did see was that they did do a large amount of volume, and it was a lot of high volume, high intensity, and a lot of frequency. So everything was turned up. And, you know, in some cases that could be good, but not year round. So from a science perspective, we want to tailor that back and maybe undulate the intensity so that they can recover in between those rounds of high intensity. And that way, you know, you're not going to get overuse injuries, you're not going to burn out, but you'll still get an adaptation when it comes down to whatever it is, whether it be endurance, power, speed, whatever. And that's where, you know, that's where a structured system comes into play. And that's why we like to use things like periodization models and having a solid method of training so that it can correlate over into the fight game very efficiently.
I wanted to tell everybody listening right now, I'd implore them to go visit your YouTube channel, because I was impressed at the fact that you're learned in a lot of different topics and a plethora of different topics. And I want to ask you, were you always a good learner, or do you think you had to craft that and work on it?
I think we become good learners when we like what we are learning, when we're totally intrigued by the things that are being presented to us. And for me, as a young kid, I knew what I liked. I knew what I wanted to do. So it wasn't hard for me to start learning about speed and power and training dynamics and methodologies and programming, and because I knew that that was something that was going to help me get better. So for that, it was very easy. Other things that you feel are not important, like anything, you kind of push it to the side and it goes in one ear and out the other. And so I think people have to have the understanding that anything that is brought to you that could be a bit of information, try to put it in the right context to where it could correlate over to your everyday life. And that's what I kind of do when I'm trying to reframe some of the exercises, some of the methods of training with the fighters, because, and athletes in general, because if they aren't bought in to what I'm trying to teach them, then it is going to go in one ear and out the other, and we'll never get a positive adaptation out of that. So when I look at learning as a means to understand and to grow, I need to be fully aware of the possibilities of how this can make me a better individual, whatever it is, you know, and that could be any study at all. I think as I get older, though, however, I become more and more curious and intrigued with all types of things in the world, right? There's so much out there that we need to learn. And some things are going to be interconnected, whether it be mathematics into physics, or biomechanics, and anatomy. And then we could talk about historical evidence or history in general and how it correlates over to everyday life now, because history does repeat itself. And so when I look at that, if I'm very passionate, and you guys are listening to this, they're probably passionate about combat sports. If you're passionate about that, learn about the history of it. Learn about the pastime, how it all started. And from there, you get to see that nothing's really different. It just evolved in a way that is going to be beneficial for the new age fighter. But we all still think similar to centuries ago. We have the same mind. Now, don't get me wrong, you have new technology, and we have the ability to learn new things because of that and do new things because of that. But our mindset is the same. And what I do believe that we need to understand is that once you have an ability to do the things that you need to do, and you get that talent that you've been given, you need to hone in on that talent and improve the skills that complement that talent. And the only way you can do that is to really look into yourself and learn about yourself and having that introspection, which takes some inner learning. And so, again, that goes back to when we talk about, is learning been something that has been easy for me? I like to listen to everything around me, including myself. And when you have that ability, then things are a little bit easier to understand in a lot of ways.
Bill, you keep on making reference to this one word that I feel like everybody listening right now should know, and that's adaptation. So can you run us through why is this so important?
Well, when you adapt to something, you get better at it, right? So it becomes somewhat of second nature, right? When you start crawling when you're a baby, and then you start to stand up and you fall down and you stand up and you fall down, your body becomes adapted to actually standing up. And then from there, once you get that quality adaptation where you have the balance and the stability to hold on to yourself, the next step is to walk. So an adaptation leads to another adaptation, and that just leads to growth over time. So we need to give the body, the mind, the nervous system, the stimulus to cope with the stress. And the way that they're going to do that is to constantly stimulate that particular aspect of whatever you're doing to cause a positive adaptation, right? So if I'm trying to improve my strength, I need to constantly work at a certain percentage of load or intensity level that is going to increase my strength adaptations, right? And then you obviously know what could happen after you get stronger, right? Then after that, what's the next adaptation that we want to acquire? Maybe it's power production, or maybe it's endurance, whatever it is. But we have to give the body the stimulus, and we have to stress the body and the entire cell itself, or the organism itself, to overcome. And the only way you do that is to constantly put yourself through painful situations, whether it be physical or psychological. And that's the only way you're going to adapt. I don't know if you've seen, but I recently did 51 miles on a ruck walk. I did 60 pounds on my back. And I was originally supposed to do, my goal was 150 miles. And by mile 40, I had holes in my feet, my toenails were all gone, and I ended up developing rhabdomyolysis, which basically means there's enzymes and proteins that get put into the bloodstream after huge amounts of muscle breakdown and could potentially cause a kidney failure. So I was on the verge of kidney failure because I went to where I physically couldn't go anymore. But mentally, I put myself in the position to know that I have more in the tank, and I actually went to the end of where I physically was capable of going. So now I created that adaptation, whether it be psychologically and physiologically. Some may say that's a negative adaptation because I put myself in the hospital. But now I know that that's where my sticking point is, or that's where my end point is, or whatever have you. And I also know now, I've grown the knowledge and understanding that I need to change some things up in order for me to get a little bit further. And that's what life is about. It's about going through challenging aspects and making sure that these challenges allow you to grow. And you can only grow when those challenges are as hard as the body can take to cause a stimulus adaptation. So I always say this quote, I say, you know, strength is developed by how you manage pain, right? And I think that when you can manage pain in a good way, right? You have your muscle soreness, you have some psychological pain that you may go through, maybe you lost a loved one, and you become a little bit more calloused in your approach and you learn from it, right? You may get a bad breakup. Now you learned, as long as you are, I guess, in tune with what happened, you can learn from your mistakes. I've lost fights. Obviously, we go back and we learn from those losses, and that makes you a better individual from it. But you cannot learn anything if you don't go through this hard type of experience. And that's what it comes down to overall. As fighters, they're going to go through wins and losses. When I was with, you know, I've worked with Dustin Poirier for 7 years, and we've had over 11 camps together. And for a long time, we were on a good winning streak, you know, until we fought Khabib. And I think that the loss of Khabib gave DP the ability to learn and to grow and to evolve and to be a better person. Maybe not even talk about fighting. Let's talk about being a better person. If he didn't do that, then he may have been, and I don't want to put words in his mouth or anything like that. I want to talk out of turn. But from my perspective, if you looked at it, maybe the Conor fights wouldn't have gone the same way because he didn't go through that situation beforehand. But he became a stronger, tougher individual, even though he's one of the toughest guys I know. He's gone through a lot of shit, you know, growing up. This has helped him. And that's in anybody. You know, you look at, I've been through knockout, drag out fights where I thought I was going to die. And it allowed me to understand that I got a little bit more in the tank than I think I do. And you can't do that if you don't get tested. So seek that. Seek the arduous task, so that you can come out a more stronger, more in-depth individual.
That adaptation that you're talking about, seeing that you have so much information now and you've adapted and you're talking about your mental fortitude, even with the running, let's say you were going to go back into fighting. You know, you had those fights with Socrates, Pierre. That's the craziest bout that I've seen from your career. Knowing everything that you know now, do you think that you could do better going back into MMA?
Yeah, I mean, now for sure, because I've learned a lot. Like I'm wiser now. I have more experience. And, you know, back then I'm 20, 21, 22 years old. You kind of think you're on top of the world and had a good amateur career. And, you know, but then life starts to hit you and you start to have other opportunities and things come up and then your focus gets torn. It gets thrown in so many different directions. And at the time, I was coaching full time and I'm still coaching full time, but I was still a professional fighter. So I was running a business, trying to be a coach and trying to be a professional fighter. And the one thing that I can tell, and what I do tell all my guys, is that, especially the young kids, if they're not all in this sport, and in mixed martial arts, because there's so many modalities of training that you have to do on a daily basis, you better stop now. Or don't think that you're going to make it to the highest level, because you have to be all in. If you're not all in, you're going to get hurt. And you're not going to be as successful as you want to be. And so, you know, for that, took some concussions and lost some fights that I shouldn't have lost. But if I go back, then I would understand the process a little bit better because I had to go through that. And with time comes wisdom. And so, yeah, am I ever going to get back in the cage? I'm 35 years old. I don't think it's in my cards, right? But will I ever not do a competition? Yeah, I'll do some jiu-jitsu competitions and maybe even doing a boxing match. But I'm not going to – it's not a part of the plan right now. You know, the plan is to help those in need that are at that level and can potentially be world champions.
I'm currently using Fight Ready. I informed you about that. And the movement that really killed it for me was the trap bar deadlift. I've always been pretty bad at deadlifting, so trap bar deadlift was a new addition into my training that's really been a game changer. I want to ask you, how do I incorporate flexibility into the volume of the training, because it is a pretty expansive training system?
Flexibility as in changing up exercises, or what do you mean by that?
More so body mechanics, moving into spaces and, you know, like splits and
all that's
needed.
The biggest thing when I look at athletes in general, like, yeah, you do need to have flexibility, and flexibility is passive range of motion, right? You need to be able to get into positions and be able to be comfortable in those positions, right? But there's another thing called mobility. And mobility, in my opinion, and a lot of people have different definitions to it, but in all actuality, mobility is just the ability to get into a position, right, to have that range of motion, but to be strong in those end ranges. So having active range of motion as opposed to passive range of motion. And that's going to be more beneficial for you as an athlete, because it's not... like, let's say, for instance, you're in jiu-jitsu and you're getting stacked. And now you're getting stacked and you don't have the strength to maintain your position. So now you can't barambola roll. You can't maintain or retain your guard because you're just getting stacked and you have no strength in your posterior chain or in your hip flexors or in your hamstrings or whatever it is to maintain that position. And so from that, that's why you want to increase your active in-range control. So what I would do is you can use what's called, it's an FRC term, a functional range conditioning term, but it's pales and rails, which are progressive and regressive angular isometric contractions in those end ranges. And what isometrics do, it gives you strength in those positions. So let's say, for instance, you're getting into like an S-guard position or what we call a 90-90, where you got, you know, internal rotated side and an external rotated side on the hip. Now, from there, in order for you to gain more range in that position, let's start working in isometrics. So now I'm going to push down, let's say on a progressive angular isometric, I'm going to push down into the ground. Then from there, I'm going to regress that by trying to pull up into my body, because I'm trying to gain more range in that externally rotated side, right? So it's hard to explain if I can't show you, but what you're basically trying to do is you're trying to downregulate any type of nociception, or you have receptors in the body that stops. They're called Golgi tendon organs. It stops the movement from occurring because it feels like it's not strong enough to get into the position, right? So what do you got to do? Well, you got to get strength in that position to allow you to downregulate that Golgi tendon and get you more range of motion, right? That's why you become stiff, is because you're just not strong or stable. When you walk on ice, right, if you don't have ice skates on, you become very rigid when you step. It's like, all right, I don't want to fall, right? Because you're not stable. Does that make sense? So we have to gain stability before we can get range of motion.
Let's say people are listening to this right now and they are following the programs, but they feel like they're lacking that progressive overloading in their training, and they're training often and consistently. What would you say to those people?
Are they lacking the progressive overload?
Let's say they try to go for the weight and they still can't do it.
Okay, so there's several factors that are happening there. It's either going to be a problem with your programming and a problem with your recovery, or you're just not ready for that actual exercise. So what I would do is I would look at your program as a whole and start very low. So you want to go as low intensity as possible to get enough volume in so that you can get the intermuscular and intermuscular coordination, basically meaning you want things to fire on all cylinders. You want your neuromuscular system to be firing. You want your coordination of your movement quality to be on point, and you want the movement to look good, because the moment that you can move efficiently, that's where you're going to be able to put more load on the bar. I was training for fights primarily, I would say, for 8 years. But then when I retired, I wanted to get stronger. Like, I that was my goal. And so I go, okay, what do I need to do? So I always put myself in the position to do that from a competition standpoint, because that's what's going to get the best out of me, because I'm a competitor. So I started powerlifting, right? And when I went to the powerlifting gym and I found teammates and a coach that was actual powerlifters, they basically tore up my form to pieces. They were like, you're doing it all wrong, right? And don't get me wrong, I was a strong guy. Grew up, you know, obviously lifting weights, playing football, then in the fighting. But powerlifting and weightlifting, they teach you how to lift weights, right? That's the biggest thing. You learn technical efficiency. So I had a good squat. I had about a 465-pound squat, right, at a body weight of like 190. Now, fast forward that, it took me probably about 4 months to hone in on the technique, and I squatted over 600, right? It wasn't like I got stronger from that time frame. There's no possible way. I just got better technique, and the technique of learning how to breathe and brace, how to set the bar on my back, how to squeeze the bar and create tension, that's how I was able to get that squat up. Now, yes, on top of the fact that I did grow, I was about 215 when I did it too as well, so more weight on the body. But what I'm trying to tell you is that the weight was easier and lighter when I was able to have better technique. So it may be that. It may be that their technique just sucks and that they need to improve on that first. Then from there, increase the volume to build more muscle hypertrophy, because give or take, you know, a bigger muscle has the potential to be a stronger muscle. And then from there, once you get that technical efficiency down, you do a block of hypertrophy for about maybe 6-12 weeks, so on and so forth. Then you want to start to progress into your strength cycle. That could be somewhere around 6 to 8 weeks. And then start to PR on those particular lifts. Another thing that you want to do is don't jump too fast and make smaller jumps. You don't have to do a 10-pound or 20-pound jump every time. Make smaller jumps, 2.5 pounds, 5 pounds. Doesn't have to be crazy, as long as you're progressing. And then remember, you're never going to be on a linear path straight up, right? You're always going to have some type of undulation, because you're everybody's stressed out, man. You have stress everywhere, and stress is systemic. And you're not always going to feel 100% when you get into the gym. So you have to take that into account. What I like to do when I load is I like to do either step loading or wave loading, because it still allows me to have a progressive action through week by week, but it also gives me time to recover. So whether it be 3 weeks up and 1 week down, right? Let's say we go 3 weeks up on a percentage. So we go, you know, let's just say I'm hitting 65, 70, 75%. I drop it back down for a week. Deload to about 50, 55%. And then the next week I'll start up again and go 75, 80, 85 like that. And it could be a pendulum wave or it could be a step loaded wave. With the step loading, you're just maintaining the weight, but you're increasing the volume. So it would look like this. Let's say I wanted to work pure strength. And in the strength ranges, you're going to go somewhere around 80 to 90% for more of that strength adaptation, and then the next week we would go 90-95%. Now that's maximal strength, that's absolute strength, but the volume will increase. So you're only increasing load after you do about 3 to 4 weeks of that cycle. Does that make sense? So we'll do 3 weeks of 80%, 3 weeks of 85, 3 weeks of 90, so on and so forth. But week by week will increase the volume. And so more work is being done week by week. When I look at a fighter off camp, my goal is to improve on their work capacity. So we're going to be doing more volume and frequency off camp because the goal isn't to recover. The goal is to adapt and get stronger and build more muscle and get fitter. Then when camp starts, my immediate goal is to make sure that they're recovered so that they can do their skills training. So when I'm in that particular zone of training, let's say it's in camp 8 weeks out, I'm going to do wave loading so that I can go 3 weeks up and then I can give them a deload to recover before we start our next cycle. And usually if we're 8 weeks out, and primarily when you have a fight camp, it's 8 weeks. So we'll have 3 weeks up. We'll go 8 weeks out, 7 weeks out, 6 weeks out, 5 weeks out, we deload, bring all the volume down about 60%, bring some of the intensity down by about 15%. Then the following week, we'll go back, but now we're in a peaking phase. So everything transitions over to the speed of the sport. So now it's explosive power work. It may be some type of contrast training, but we're getting closer to the fight, meaning we need to make sure that we are as sport specific as possible.
Phil, what the fuck is undulation?
Well, you look at like, undulation just means up and down, like up and down, ebbs and flows, right? So with undulating intensities, you just bring the intensity up or down based on the week or based on the day. So there's a non-linear approach to training called daily undulation or DUP. And there's also weekly undulation. With daily undulation, it's going to be very beneficial for those that are training year round, right? Because it allows them to still maintain things and build things at the same time. And with fighters, we train year round. So there is no off season, really. There is no in season. There's none of that. You may have, I like to call it off camp, but you're still training, right? And for the most part, they're still probably sparring. They're still probably helping their teammates out, especially in MMA. Not so much in boxing, but in MMA. And so when I'm working with an athlete that's a mixed modality sport like MMA, right, when you have so many different things that you have to work on, we have to make sure that they're either maintaining or progressing. They're either maintaining or you're gaining. And you have this thing called vertical integration where we just try to tie everything up together. We build a wide base and then we build vertically on that with everything going up in the right direction. So if I'm going to work with a fighter and I primarily know that they may have to take a fight on short notice, then we have to train everything at once, right? But there's going to be focus points based upon the individual's time frame, the circumstances, the situations, and the actual individual itself. If the athlete is taking fights on short notice, let's say they're at the regional scene, right? And now they're very good. They're undefeated. They can get a call up by the UFC at any moment, right? They need to be 2 weeks out at all times, right? Because most of the time you're going to get a 2 week out notice or maybe even less than that. So those individuals need to be fully physically prepared to go in at any point in time. That means the weight needs to be the right percentage from scale weight, and they have to be physically prepared from a power, speed, endurance standpoint too as well. So that's why we like to utilize undulating type of methods of training, or it could be something like a conjugate style where I've coined the term cadence conjugate. I don't know if you've heard that before when I talk about it. I grew up doing West Side Conjugate, right? So West Side Barbell is one of the strongest gyms in the world, owned by Louis Simmons. Louis Simmons is a mentor of mine. And I was doing West Side.
Matt Brown, if you've heard about the UFC fighter, Matt Brown has gone there and he was doing...
No, Matt's my boy. Yeah, Matt's my boy.
Yeah, but yeah, that's why he's a fucking beast. That's why his elbows and everything on his body's fucking hard as fuck.
My God, mate. Yeah, listen, Matt went there because he knew that it's something that he needed. Not only from a physical standpoint, and you can ask him this, but from a mental standpoint, these guys that were in their training were all about that life. They could have been fighters if they wanted to be. They just ended up lifting weights. Right. So everybody was a tough motherfucker, right? Including Louis. right? So it's a mentality too that you take into that. Now, Matt started training West Side Conjugate and he started winning fights, right? And because of the fact that, you know, maybe, and it's the way you train. It's not all about lifting barbells. Barbells are just a tool, right? You could do anything. You could use anything. You could use sandbags. You can use stones. You can use tires. You can. I've done it all.
Or it's not about that. You could be in prison.
I've done that too. You know what I'm saying? I've been in jail having to do other shit by myself with towels and my bunk mates. Trust me, I understand. You need to understand first and foremost, what are you trying to adapt to? And then on top of that, they need to be able to recover from that adaptation because it's going to break down the body. And so when you get back to undulation, that allows you to recover in between those bouts. With conjugate, it's the same concept. You're utilizing two forms of training. You're utilizing speed training and strength training. And you're going to combine that each week as you go to train to progress for whatever competition it is. That's all.
Phil, what question do you have for me about my experience with Fight Ready?
Well, first of all, do you like it? How are you doing with it?
Yeah, fuck yeah. I've jumped the highest that I've ever jumped in my life.
Nice. Was there anything that you could change in it?
The main critique that I saw online was that the training load was just too much. But I feel like the reason that it's too much is because it has to be comprehensive. So it's like you can't have one without the other.
So there's two versions of it. And I think people mess this up a lot, right? There's two versions. There's the 4-day a week and then there's the 2-day a week. So if you're not a competitive fighter and you're not getting ready for a fight, I would say do the 4-day a week. And the only reason why I did that was because I knew that the general public or people that are just recreational training, they're going to want to do more weight training. Now, the biggest thing is that, remember, this is an overall general program. If I had somebody that came to me and goes, and a lot of people do, a lot of people DM me and they'll go, man, I'm tired. I'm like, all right, well, back off the one day, right, that you don't necessarily need. Maybe it's a dynamic day. And just treat that as a mobility day, right? And then just work on recoverability. And that way you don't have all that, because it really comes down to the frequency of the training, right? If that's not the case, maybe the frequency you got rid of that, you're doing the 3 days and you're still tired. Well, then drop off on one of the sets on all the main exercises. You see what I'm saying? So now instead of doing 4 sets, you're doing 3 sets, right? And that's all you got to do. Bringing down the volume is going to reduce fatigue more than bringing down the intensity. Don't get me wrong. Intensity is going to stimulate the nervous system, but the volume is going to break down the muscle more. And that's what's going to cause you more soreness and more overall fatigue. So bring down the volume, and then you got to know exactly what you're able to recover from. And a really smart individual by the name of Mike Israetel, Dr. Mike, everybody kind of knows him now by, you know, YouTube. But he coined the term maximal recoverable volume. And it's not really his term, but he's made it known. And minimal effective volume and maximal recoverable volume. You want to start off on the minimal effective volume so that you can get the adaptation and then slowly progress your way into that maximal recoverable volume. But that takes time and understanding your body, right? That's not going to happen in 8 weeks, you know, and every day and every year, or I should say every week and every month and every year, you're constantly getting better if you're doing the right things. And so what you could recover from the year before is different than the year now. And that's where you know you're growing. That's how you know you're going to get better, because the more volume you can do, the more you're going to adapt and be better at.
I've got an interesting question for you. So what do you think, what piece of knowledge do you think that you understand now that you didn't think that you were going to get out of your research in SNC?
Oh, by far the experience working with fighters and just people in general, having communication like working with so many different types of people, right? I tell this to my coaches all the time, and I've been able to work with and mentor over 5,000 coaches, and I still say the same thing. No matter what you learn in school, no matter what you learn in the books and in your certification courses, nothing's going to prepare you to work with athletes or clients in general, like actually getting on the floor and doing the thing. And so you have to gain the experience, because there's going to be so many different personality types, characteristics, learning curves that are all different per individual. So that's the biggest thing that I've been able to take away from my 15 years of doing this, is actually understanding people. And that's why the next step in my evolution is to pursue a PhD in sports psychology, because what intrigues me most is how you can change someone's perspective based upon either the statistical data that you actually show them from a numbers perspective, or how they actually feel when they get the job done. And usually it goes hand in hand. So, you know, being able to have that and create more value and really focus in on that is the next step.
You're actually going to pursue that PhD?
Yep. Yes, sir.
How long is that going to take?
I got to take some prereqs on some psych courses and neuroanatomy. So it'll take me a good, I'd say about 4 or 5 years.
Why are you going back to school?
Because I always want to grow, man. Like, if you're not growing, if you're not learning, you're dying. And so it's just another way for me to test myself, to challenge myself. A lot of people ask me that, but it's one, because I want to create more value. I want to be able to give more. I want to be able to do things, and I want to learn things that I want to learn, right? And sometimes it takes you to have to go back and do something uncomfortable and do something that you really don't like, because I don't like school. The school is not a fun thing for me. I'm not a fan of it. And that's why I do it. You know, I don't like running, but that's why I do it. You see what I'm saying? And I think that that's going to give me the ability to really hone in and lock in on the learning process of what I'm trying to learn.
The final question I have for you is, when did you start working with our friend Jake Brutal?
I've been working with Jake for almost 8 years. So he came to American Top Team fresh out from London, and he had a bald head and he had a ton of tattoos, and I said, I want to work with this guy. And we just clicked from there, man. We're just like the same type of people. He's a brother to me, man. His mom and his dad, like, we're all family, you know. And that's one thing, like, creating a bond with your fighters like that is really something special. And so with him, I mean, like, it's not a client, coach, athlete, coach relationship anymore. He's family. So, yeah, I've been working with him since 2006. I want to say maybe 16, maybe 15, something like that. It was early. And then he finally moved to Miami, and then that was it. And then he started working with Timberland. I started working with Timberland, and now we have that connection with him. And, yeah, sky's the limit. He's doing great. I love to see him now at this point in his life. I mean, he's done everything that he could do, or that he needs to do in combat sports, I believe, in my opinion, because I want to see him do other things and be successful in other things. You know, a great fighter, a great dude, but he's also very entertaining. I know if you had him on the podcast, you know how entertaining he is, right? And he looks the part. I said, man, if you can, I like to see you either in the WWE or in some movies or something. Make some money and have some fun and don't get punched in the face anymore. Let's just have fun, you know? So it comes to that time. I said the same thing to Kevin Lee. I said, Kevin, man, you got star quality. Like, you don't have to fight anymore. You don't have to prove anything anymore. But, you know, something you can't, they got to do it on their own terms, right? That happens a lot. And I can respect that. And I'll be there for them when they want to go ahead and start another camp. But, you know, there's the other things outside of fighting, you know, especially if you think about it long term for the rest of your life. It's a small portion of your life.
that's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Phil, for coming on the show. Is there any final remarks you want to say to the people at home as we wrap up the podcast today?
Final remarks, if you're a fighter, young athlete that is looking to want to be the best that you can be, make it to the UFC or whatever it is, just make sure you stay the course and stay focused. The biggest thing that I can take from my own career was that I lost focus based upon trying to chase something, basically chasing the shiny object. And if you have a dream, make sure that you put the right people on your side to allow you to go after that dream. Don't let toxic people try to ruin your flow. Make your vision set in stone and then have the goals along the line so that you can reach it down the line. So make sure that you stay on point with that. And then anybody else that are fans of the sport, let's just make sure we educate ourselves a little bit more, right? I like to see historians of the sport. I like to see people that really know the details about every fighter. That really is, it's like a breath of fresh air when I can see a fan know about each and every fighter and the statistics of them and how they came up. That shows that they really care, and these guys need it, man, you know. But there's a lot of haters out there. I see it on Twitter all the time. But that's it. That's all I got.
Follow Phil on Instagram, link in the description. Buy all of his programs and follow Anything Combat. We will see you guys next time. Bye-bye.